Tchila Rechimu, it's an overwhelming task just to attempt to say anything about Revara Lebelzer Eschus Yogin Aleinu. And although we're speaking about Kadosh Elyon Malach Yasharis every single week, something about Revara Lebelzer, that he lived within the 100 years that we're living, he died in the 1960s. And we have a lot. We have a lot about his life, thousands of stories. Of course, the book, The Escape of the Rebbe from Belz, I haven't yet had a chance to read it, but I heard from Rebbe Tim Weinberger and the Rav Shlita and from others that it's a life-changing book for those who have read it, you know what I'm talking about. But 10 years ago, this sefer came out. It's Tu Chalak and Bakridish Pnima. It's an account of the Gabai, the Feigl. In the inner chambers of Rala Belzer. Never seen anything like this before. I was encouraged to get this by my Rebbe. And I learned from him the special Derech Eretz when it comes to Revara Lebelzer. With the previous Belzer Rebbe. So he mentioned his escape from Europe was L'malu min ha-teva, nisim all over the place. In the war he lost 11 children and his wife. And once somebody came to the Belzer Rav and said, well, it must have been very hard for the Rav to suffer such a loss like that. And his face turned white and he said, Chas v'shalom. He says, I consider it a schus that I was able to partake in such a korban to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Such a korban to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Of course, like anything with tzaddikim, these are not, a person shouldn't try to fake such madrigas. But just from that story alone, you can understand we're talking here about Kaddish Kaddishim, Mamish. He suffered a lot, although he didn't show his suffering. Although he did say once that he suffers so much that he wouldn't wish his suffering upon anyone in the world, not even the biggest Rasha in Klal Yisrael. Only on Haman HaRasha he would wish his suffering. In fact, he was named Aaron, and they thought that he was named after Aaron Chernobler. But his father said that he named him after Aaron HaGadol from Karlin because he saw that he would suffer a lot. And Aaron HaGadol from Karlin, he suffered plenty in his life as well, so since he saw he would be a Baal Yisurin, so he named him after Aaron HaGadol from Karlin. So there's two stories. There's some of the stories about the inner chambers of Revara Lebelzer, and then there's the stories from the Sefer, which regularly we learn, and there's so many pages, more than any other tzaddik I've seen about Revara Lebelzer. So that once his father, the previous Belzer Rav, Reb Sacher Doif, he told Revara Le that he shouldn't go to the mikvah, because he was very frail by nature. And his father told him to stop going to the mikvah at a certain point. So one night, late at night, so he got up from his bed, or from the house, whatever it was, and he started to make his way towards the mikvah. And one of the chaverim was very curious to see what was going to happen. His father told him not to go, and his derech eretz to his father was She'in L'Shire. So he went and he followed him, and he saw the Belzer Rav is taking off his clothes. He's standing by the thing. He's ready to go into the mikvah. He's about to go into the mikvah, and he goes, "Hinni muchun mezum lekayim mitzvus kibud aveim." And then he put his clothes back on, and then he went back to the house. Everybody had such derech eretz for the Belzer Rav. In fact, his father once told him, once when the Belzer Rav, Pesach HaDayif, came to be traveled in the mikvah, so there was an entourage who came to the mikvah, and the Belzer Rav of Arla also came, the future Belzer Rav. So his father told told Varla, he said, if I had a guf like yours, I wouldn't go to the mikvah. If I had a body as pure as yours, I wouldn't go to the mikvah. In fact, later on in his life, he went to the mikvah only once a year. And my Rebbe explained, because he was higher than mikvah. My Rebbe said that about his Rav, the Minchas Yehudla from Sitchin, Chaskia Ganaleno, that he also used to go to the mikvah very rarely, just a few times during the year. And he said, but already at a certain point, he was higher than mikvah. His body, it was like, when the Lubavitch Rebbe came to visit the Belzer Rav, right in Europe when he was very young, so the Belzer Rav had an inyan that, for the most of the day, by the way, he sat with his head down with his eyes closed. He hardly ever opened up his eyes. But he saw from one end of the world to the next, and in fact, the entire time, throughout the entire day practically, he was murmuring things under his breath. He was constantly talking to Hashem, constantly, we'll get to that in a minute. He never stopped moving his lips, but he sat with his head down, with his eyes closed, pretty much the entire day, and he would shake people's hands, but with a handkerchief, mostly with a handkerchief. He was so careful with Natilas. He used to be noitel his hands tens and tens of times every single day, and his son said about him, when he perished in the war, of course, he didn't have any children after he remarried in Eretz Yisrael. But his son, he said about his father, that my father's a hiris in Atila Sadaim. When he washes his hands, he has 300 chumers in Atila Sadaim. 300 chumers in Atila Sadaim.
That he's thinking about?
Yeah. Conscious of 300 chumers. He was a goyin oilam also. He said, Rav Meir Arik, who was the god of Lador, he said, I never saw, in the camps, he said, I never saw such a master like the Imre Emes, and I never saw such a goyin in Torah like a Barla Belzer. But he never, ever, ever showed any... said Tyrus did anything, he everything was about Saint Lechas. The way that the Belzer of everything which he did was masked in a way of simplicity, and nobody was able to know his madrigas. He tried as hard as he could that nobody should understand what was going on with him. So many stories. Ruach HaKodesh was flowing like water there, hundreds and hundreds of times a week. The stories go on and on. It's just, he was literally a Malach Elokim. Oh, the story with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. So when the Lubavitcher Rebbe came, and so although he had his eyes closed, when the Lubavitcher Rebbe came, he took away the handkerchief and he shook his hand straight. He did that for only certain people, but he was very careful with what he touched, and he never touched a Now, the Gemara says, you know, there were some, Amaroyim Tanaim that they didn't touch any coins, any money. It was like possible to even touch it. He had such a kpeida. He used to say about himself. He told the Gabi once. He says, "You think that I'm being such a machmir? I'm doing things. Everything which I do is written down in Svar. If you go learn Svar, you'll see everything I do is written down." That's what he said. "I don't do anything without it being written down." He didn't move without a reason to move. Halavai, they should come out with this in English. It's hard to. So to really understand it, it's a very modern Hebrew, but very eloquently written. It's impossible to describe such this person. Just some examples of Malava Malka now. So once Rav Yehuda Lejukover, he was once in Tel Aviv, which is where the Belzer Rav spent a lot of many years in Tel Aviv. When he would walk down the streets in Tel Aviv, the Belzer Rav, so of course he always had his eyes closed, and he was able to see everything with his eyes closed, but he used to walk in a very particular way, how he used to go around. So somebody once asked him why, and he says, I'm careful not to step on the Shemus HaKdoshim, meaning step on Hashem's name wherever he walked. So Rav Yudala once came to him. And he didn't. He wanted to come by Shalashuddas time, but the Belzer Rav Shalashuddas went to like 2 o'clock in the morning. I mean, he never slept. He mamish never slept. We'll get to that in a second. I see. There's so many things I say. We have to get to. It's just we could be here for an hour for sure, at least, huh? Oh, so this is that story. So one of the stories about Malava Malka. So he didn't know what to do. Rav Yudala, he says he couldn't come for Shalashuddas at 2 o'clock. And then come home and then be like Malava Malka because it's too late for him to eat so late. So he too was a malach, but the Belzer Rav was special. So he said he didn't want to show up and have Malava Malka at Shalashuddas by the Belzer Rav, meaning to make his Malava Malka then, because he didn't want to come to the Shalashuddas and make a Malava Malka out of it. So he asked his rabbitson what to do. So she said, "You're right, it's too late to come home and have Malava Malka. Have Shalashuddas now, and then go and make Malava Malka by the Rav's, by the Rebbe's Shalashuddas." Fine, so he did that. So he sat down at the tish, and so the rebbe was giving him shiraim, and he gave it to the guy by the hand to Rabbi Yudala, and he said, "Tell Rabbi Yudala that he could be yoytze his malav malka with the shalshuras. You shouldn't think that he can't." He didn't want to tell the rebbe, obviously, because he didn't want him to think that he said, tell him he could be yoytze. It's not a problem. He could be yoytze his malav malka with the shalshuras. So he told that story to Rabbi Shalom Schatz. Shantz, who himself, we'll talk about him Mitzvah Shem one time. The Belzer Rebbe helped him to be the tzaddik of the generation. He was machniy himself lagamrei to Shalom Shantz. But Shalom Shantz, he heard this story and he says, "You think that's Ruach HaKodesh? That's not Ruach HaKodesh." He says that for a tzaddik to be toifes another person's thoughts, to chop their thoughts in their presence, that's not. He didn't think that was like a such a big gilu of the Belzer Rebbe. By the Belzer Rebbe, this was always people would sit down by the tish, or they would come in, and he knew exactly what they were thinking all the time. For example, there's another story of a yid that he came and he got some type of a kugel from the shiraim of the Belzer Rebbe, and he's thinking to himself. He saw that there was like some type of a lakshan kugel or yisham kugel on the table, and he thought to himself, "I really wanted that type of a kugel." So right away, the Belzer Rebbe picked it up and he sent another kugel down to the one that he wanted. He says, "Here, this is everything." He picked up. There was another yid that his name was Rav Yaakov Shimshin. And everybody used to call him Shimshin, but he didn't like that people called him that. He wanted to be called Yaakov Shimshin. Right? So he was by the tish. So the Belzer says, "Please pass this to Yaakov Shimshin over there." He said out loud, "Please pass this to Yaakov Shimshin." Just right away. This is constantly. He said that the Gabbai said that there were Maisim every single day. Thousands and thousands of Maisim like that. The people came into the Belzer Rebbe and he knew everything. He saw everything. He knew everything. Unbelievable. It's brought down, I don't know the whole Maisa, but he once spent time in Germany, many weeks actually, right opposite where I think Hitler Yimach Shamay was, and he tried to be poil Yeshuas for Klai Yisrael. It was like a one-on-one which he was having with Hitler Yimach Shamay. He left saying that he couldn't win, he couldn't avert the Gzeira Lagamre. But he was Oisek constantly in higher Olamas. He was Kimat not in this world Bechlal. Although he was so careful in every single prat and the person's zahiris, and Sfarim say that Rav Heimiger mentioned it recently, that you know the Berditchever was the Sanegar Shal Yisrael. He was the great defender of the Klai Yisrael. And in recent times, there was nobody like the Belzer Rebbe when it came to speaking on behalf of Klai Yisrael, about saying good things about every single Jew. He couldn't be soivel anybody to say anything about a Jew which had any negative connotation whatsoever. Once there was somebody, he once asked somebody, tell me what goes on in your town for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So the Siyas started to explain Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So you know it's not such a firm place, but people come Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. We have to bring in benches. There's hundreds of people. And then he started to say, but you know, during the rest of the year, you know, it's the Olam, and the Belzer Rebbe stopped him right there. He says, they daven biyichidus. They daven biyichidus. They don't come to shul. They daven biyichidus. It's the couldn't say anything about a yid. Once he used to murmur a lot, like we had mentioned, under his breath. He was always saying something. And once a doctor came and he asked the Belzer Rebbe, he says, what are you saying all the time? He says, I'm saying good things about Klai Yisrael. So, he was always in front of the Kisei HaKavod. He said that one time he was in Europe before he came to Eretz Yisrael. So he was living in a certain house, certain apartment, and then a few weeks later, he said he needed to move apartments. This apartment wasn't good, even though it was Erev Rosh Chodesh or maybe Rosh Chodesh. You're not supposed to move Rosh Chodesh. He says, "I have to move. I can't stay here any longer." So he went to another apartment and he was there for a few weeks. And he says, "I can't stay here any longer. We have to move." He didn't explain everything, of course. He used to give reasons which didn't make sense and which did make sense, but everything was just to cover things. Then he had to move again. He constantly was moving. It's only many years later that they found out that where he was living at the time, there was a ghetto. It was in the city of Pest. And he said, it turned out, Lamafreya, that they realized that the entire ghetto, the Jewish ghetto, was from those four corners of the apartments which he stayed. He created the ghetto from the apartments which he made. And 67,000 Yidden were saved in that ghetto because of the Belzer Rebbe's efforts about making that ghetto there in Pest.
Thank you.
Here's a story about his Ruach HaKodesh. There was a Yid, Rav Moshe Troib, that he came to Uruguay. Is that how you pronounce it? South America? Mm-hmm. Uruguay. And it was before Pesach. He came to visit in Eretz Yisrael. And he came to the Belzer Rav. So the Belzer Rav, you know, he said, "Where do you live?" He said, I live in Uruguay." He said, "Oh no!" He came. He was a chassid of Ger. He came to the Beis Yisrael from Ger. So he says, "Oh, if you're gonna be, how long are you gonna be here for? Be here for a while? Oh, okay, so go to Tel Aviv. Go to the Belzer Rav." So he went to the Belzer Rav. The Belzer Rav said, "Will you be here after Pesach?" So he says, "Come back to me again after Pesach." Fine. So he goes to the Beis Yisrael. He says, "How was it? Did you go to the Belzer Rav?" "Yes." He said, "Come after Pesach." So he said, "Come. Make sure you go to him after Pesach." Comes after Pesach. He starts to ask him all these questions about where he lives. So he says, "Would you happen to know if there's a Yid by so and so's name who lives so and so in your community?" Da 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 da. He says, "Yeah, of course, yeah, I know him." He says, "But Balei Aleinu, you know, he has a butcher shop and he sells trefa meat. He's mamish completely fry. He's off the derech." So the Belzer Rav got very shaken from that. So he said, "Here, I want you to take this challah and tell him that this is from the Belzer Rav. Belzer Rav is giving him a challah. But tell him it was baked after Pesach. He shouldn't have any worries that it was baked on Pesach or anything like that. It was baked." So he thought it was a joke that he was going to bring this bread to this Yid, that he would care to the Belzer Rav. So he went back. He went back to his community. And right away he wanted to see what would come from this. And he brought the challah to this Jew and he said, "This is from the Belzer Rav." So he says, as soon as he got it, tears started to come down of his eyes. He says, "The Belzer Rav still remembers me. The Belzer Rav still remembers me." He says, "Before the war, he was a Belzer Chassid. But because of all the tsars which happened, he, like many, unfortunately, it was hard for them to keep to their Avodas Hashem." So he says, because of that challah that the Belzer Rav sent him, he went ahead and he sold the butcher shop, and eventually he became friendly. The whole family, Shem Tifer. So the Moshe Troib, who was the Shliach, he says one of the chidushim of the story is that one, that the Belzer Rav saw across the world that he had a chassid, and he knew that he was there. Then he sent the challah. He knew him. He knew exactly where he was, what was going on in his life. And secondly, he says you have to see from the story that the Beis Yisrael and the Belzer Rav, they worked together to bring this Yid back. The Beis Yisrael sent his chassid to the Rav Arla, make sure you go back, come back after Pesach. I mean, they were able to see things together and to be part of that. This Yid had to come back through their efforts. The Belzer Rav, he didn't compromise on any of his minhagim ever. And he had when he had if he had an inyan, if he had a minhag, whatever it was, he says, "My Rebbe once told me that in the war, that there were in the escape we mentioned, it was incredible. But there were times where they were bombing the city which he was in. But if he was in the middle of a tish, or he was in the middle of doing a suda or an inyan davening, whatever it was." He wouldn't move. I mean, everybody was running, but he wouldn't move. He would say, no, I can't, I have to finish what I was doing. He never, ever compromised on any of his minhagim, any of his inyanim. And the my Rebbe would say that in Shemayim there was a derech eretz for the Belzer Rav, that nothing can happen until the Belzer Rav finished what he was doing. There was certain, the whole world had derech eretz for the Belzer Rav, that he had to do his inyanim, and when he was done, one of the things that he would do also, that one time on a train, He was with his brother, the I don't forget how do you pronounce it, Bella Joyri? How do you pronounce it?
Bilgaray.
So his brother, the current Rebbe is the son of that tzaddik. So once he was, you know, the Belzer Rav before the war, he had thousands, tens of thousands of chassidim. And so before many times people would crowd and he would say when they would come close, they'd shtip. Shtips sich nicht, which means stop pushing, and he would say shtips sich nicht, stop pushing. But here on this train, so there was only two people. It was only his brother and another Yid. And before he started to say Torah on the train, by the tish on the train, so he kept saying shtips sich nicht. Nobody was there. So his brother and the other Yid on the train, they were clarifying, what's the pshat that he's doing it? It's because of his inyanim, could be because of his inyanim. So his brother said, "No, it wasn't because of his inyanim. It's because the malachim were all shtipsing, you know." So he was talking to the malachim. He was saying, "Stop, shtipsing, nach shtom, stop." We laugh, but it's mamash damas. Once, by a tish, by a titch. Parshas Beshalach, when he first left, came to Eretz Yisrael, he was in Haifa for a few Shabbosim, and everybody came and they wanted to hear from the Belzerov, you know, from those who had survived, like what happened. So once during the Tish, at one point, there was a head of the fish. He had all these inyana when it came to fish on Shabbos, like many tzaddikim. So he was playing with the fish. He was spinning it and turning it up and down, the head of the fish. And then he took the fish and he threw it on the floor. And he said, Ebishta helfin, that the Rasha should have a mapala. That's all he said. So nobody knew what was going on. So after Shabbos, they found out that Mussolini, the big Rasha, yeah? So he died Motzei Shabbos, right after that. So that took him out, basically. Belzerov took out Mussolini.
Took him out.
Yeah. So, we said before that the Belzerov, that everything by the Belzerov, I heard from my Rebbe, and if you learn this the Sefer, everything by the Belzerov was an inyan, was a din, that he didn't really need to eat. He was higher than that. But he was makbid to eat because he didn't want to live in a madriga which was higher than the world. But he only ate once a day. His meal consisted just of a slice of bread and soup which he made by himself. He used to cook vegetables and he used to have the broth of the soup. And other than that, maybe there was a compote he used to eat also. But that was the only meal which he had, and it was usually somewhere in the middle of the night, maybe 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, that's who would have that meal. That was his meal every day, only that meal. But because of his manim and because of the Kabbalah's call which he would have, he had a whole Seder Havoid at night that he had to do before he ate, and there was a lot which he had to do. And there were many times that if he didn't eat before Amud HaShachar, then he wouldn't eat. He wouldn't eat. And many times that his avodah went on, and he would go days without eating. But you never saw any chulsha, any sign of any weakness or of any sort. He never complained, nothing. He had to eat before Amud HaShachar, because once it was Amud HaShachar, he had to get ready to make his achanas, and he couldn't eat after Amud HaShachar. We talked about he had what's called lasos laila. He had to make the nighttime avoda. He called it lasos laila. He had to make nighttime. So what that consisted of was that one of the things that he would do before when going to sleep, he had to say, you know, 20-minute mapil alamita, you know, and kriyasma alamita. And so one of the things that he would do, and the Gabbai says that this happened every single night, he would go to the mezuzah, and he would put his hand on the mezuzah, and he would say, Gute Nacht, Gute Nacht, Gute Nacht. Good night, good night, good night. Gatanach to all the Yidden in Yerushalayim. Gatanach to all the Yidden in Eretz Yisrael. Gatanach to all the Yidden in Chol Olam Kulo. And he would say that every single night. He kept his eye on every Jew, B'chol Makom Shehem, everywhere that they were. Every single night he had to go through that Seder. He would lay down, and he basically, many times he didn't even sleep. He would just go into the bed and then he would get up, even for just a second. But he had to make night. That's what he called it. He had to make night as if he was like living like everybody else. But to eat and to sleep and everything like that, it didn't really need to happen. He just had to do it. It was a din. If it says in Shulchan Aruch that you have to go to sleep and you have to eat, so then everything by him was a din. You had to do it. But in terms of himself, much, much higher than that. One of the things about the Belzerov, already it's getting late. Actually, we didn't say anything. The Belzerov, I'll tell you one more story maybe, and then just one last thing about the Belzerov. There was a Yid that it was a Belzer Chassid, I think it was, that he was traveling and he was trying to escape Europe, and he came to a railroad, to a train station. And he didn't speak the language, and he was going to get on the wrong train. He had his whole family. His mamash takanas lafashef, that he was a Jew. There was a big sinas Yisrael there. So he didn't know what to do. All of a sudden, a Yid appeared. I didn't know he was a Yid. He had like a long beard and a white cap, and he was dressed like a guy, but he had a Yiddish face. And he said to him, are you so-and-so, Rabbi Lazar, whatever his name was? He said, yes. He says, okay, so come with me. Come with me and come to my house, and I'm gonna take you and whatever deal with you. Didn't know who he was, a stranger, but he explained to him who he was. He said the following thing. He said, I went to sleep last night, and I didn't know whether or not, if I went to sleep, I should make this travel on this trip to go for my father's yortzed, who's buried in the city which we're in now. But when I went to sleep, I had a dream that the Belzerev came to me, and the Belzerev said, you should certainly go to your father's, to the kever of your father, tomorrow. And while you're there, look for this and this yid, Belazar, this yid, and his family will be there. I want you to take them and to find them and to help them out and make sure they get to where they need to go to. So he woke up and he didn't know whether it was a chalim emes or not, if he just had seen the Belzerev, but he said that Belzerev had mentioned that it was your father's yortzeit tomorrow. So he said, if he knew it was my father's yortzeit tomorrow, so then it probably was a chalim emes, it was a true dream. So I came and I went to my father and I was looking in the train station for the yid that the Belzerev was describing. And I saw that you were probably that yid. You're probably that yid. So the Belzerev sent me in the dream to come make sure that you'd be taken care of. Meisim like this, so many meisim like this. So many meisim like this. I haven't said anything. One of the inyanim about the Belzerev, the things that happened special with the Belzerev, I'm sure it happens with tzaddikim. Even today, there must be a tzaddik like this. You know, he was the tzaddik Yisrael Olam. Is that there were times throughout the day where it didn't happen so frequently, but it did happen that the Belzerev could be sitting, could be standing, it didn't matter what, and all of a sudden a dveikus would fall upon him, that he would be stuck wherever he was. Stuck. Again, it could be that he was standing, if he was sitting, and a dveikus would fall upon him, the shechina, whatever it was, would come on top of it, would come upon him, and he couldn't move, and the whole time he said that his mouth was moving at lightning speed. Lightning speed. He was saying, talking the whole time, murmuring something. And this could go on for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 5 hours, 10 hours. He was caught in his place. He couldn't move. He wouldn't move. Would not move. And he was murmuring the entire time. And after this would happen, he would tell the Gabayim, he says, don't you tell anybody about these things. He says, I'm only allowed to tell it now because people found out about it, this and that. But he would tell the Gabayim, he said, please don't tell anyone. Don't even tell your father. Don't even tell your father that these things happened. He kept this hush hush. He didn't want anybody to know. He once said about himself, he says, I don't know why these things happened to me. It didn't happen to my father. I don't know why this happens to me. I don't know why. I don't know why this happened to me. He says that during that time, it exhausted the Belzerev so much. Not that he shvit so much that every single garment, every layer of garment which he had, by the time he was done with this dveikus, it was completely soaked in sweat. Completely soaked in sweat. And he said one time it happened, that the Belzerev was caught in a dveikus like this for 17 hours straight. 17 hours. It was a Shabbos morning. He was lying in his bed, and then one of the dveikuses came upon him, and the Gabayim kept coming, and they said, you know, Rebbe, the Oilim was waiting for Tfilis and for the Tish and everything. He says, yeah, Shine, Shine, I'm coming. And the only thing that they would do sometimes, or he would do during this dveikus, but he would wash his hands. We said he would wash his hands many, many times. But they didn't know why. There was no reason why he would wash his hands. But he would be caught in this dveikus, mamash espashas agash. It was clear that he was not in this world. They always knew he was not. But during these moments, it was obvious that he was not in this world. 17 hours straight it happened. And then on Moitzei Shabbos, finally he came out of this dveikus. It was late at night. And then the first thing he said was, is it still not too late to daven ma'ariv? That was the first thing he said. And then two people had come during that time, and the very chashav rav, and he said, I'm going to get back to you soon. And he made sure that he would get back to those people when he was done. Mamash l'malam min hatev. That was during the Sinai War, actually, that was taking place during that war. And the Gabbai says, I don't know if it was related to that or not, but he says the Shabbos before, by the Neiris Shabbos, he had an inyan by the Neiris Shabbos, he would look into the Neiris. He said that he went to the Neiris that Friday night before, and he was stuck on the Neiris. He was trying to be poel from the Yeshuas. He looked at the Neiris Shabbos for 3 hours straight, staring at the Neiris Shabbos, 3 hours straight, just looking, talking. And again, he was always his eyes closed and unbelievable. Oh, I didn't say this about the Babich Rebbe. The Babich Rebbe, when I said that he shook his hand, And when he came, he didn't have the handkerchief on his hand. And the Babachev said afterwards about the Belzerev, he says that, you want to know about the Belzerev? He was Tzura V'loi Chayme. He didn't have a body. He didn't have a body whatsoever. She was completely neshama without a guf. It's impossible to do justice. Just you hear a little bit, but we're zeichet that we should have a Pesach into a world of a tzaddik like this. But his yahrzeit was this past Friday, and there, from what I understand, there are three pilgrimages which take place in Eretz Yisrael, which are like the biggest of the year. Of course, to Rajbi, from Shem Vayachai to Racham Hakadosh on his yahrzeit, until the bells are off, thousands and thousands and thousands come, thousands.
It's the second most visited ever after Rajbi.
Oh yeah.
You got the stats?
My Rebbe told me that about the Bels HaRav. There are certain tzaddikim that they're kafi the door, but everybody knew that the Bels HaRav was a tzaddik shaloi kafi hador. I mean, he was an neshama which came into this world, which didn't belong in this generation. My Rebbe said, had he lived in the times of the Noam Ali Melech, he would have been a tzaddik. That's what he said. What type of a statement that is to say? Noam Ali Melech? Noam Ali Melech. Had he lived in the times of the Noam Ali Melech, he would have been a tzaddik. We'll see you again later.